Well, good afternoon. It's Monday. It's a brand new week. Here we go again. A ton of stuff. Boy, it's just one of those days where there's a bunch of different stories in a lot of different directions. We're going to have fun going through them all, or as many as we can this afternoon. But starting off, I want to commence a new series. I got inspired last week, a podcast I was listening to on the treatment of farm animals. And it's not the first time, but something triggered me to act. I decided we should do a series on this and learn more about the farming of animals, the way it's done in factory farms, big time, you know, thousands of animals. How do they do it there? How do they do it in small local farms? Joining us to help with that is Danielle Larice from BOTL, Bottle Farm, is that what it's called? And it's in Northeast Connecticut, and they do really small, I want to say small batch, I don't know what the lingo is, but we're going to learn. Danielle, welcome to WTIC.
Hi, Todd, thank you.
How do you say that? How do you say small batch?
We pronounce it Bottle Farm.
Bottle Farm, yeah, but how do you say what's the lingo for doing your kind of farming with small numbers of cattle and such?
Yeah, we do humane farming and also sustainable farming. So, yeah, small scale is also a good way to put it.
Small scale, okay. Tell us what the idea is here. What is the motivation for doing what you do, which is small scale and high price, I assume, so that people... Because you're treating the animals like they're deer, not deer, but like they're important and things that should be treated gently and kindly. Whereas the food we get in the grocery store, the most of the meat in there and the poultry and such is not treated that way at all. It's more like a factory.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most of the animals that are grown and that we eat in this country are grown, as you said, in very factory-like conditions. And I think that's because the large farms are motivated rather exclusively by profit. They just want to grow as many animals as they can. And certainly there's, you know, we need to feed the world, so we need to produce a lot of food. But I think the difference with the people that work more at the scale that I do is that we don't put profit first. We really put the welfare of the animal first. And to do that, it's just a completely different type of farming. It definitely happens at a different scale. It looks different. It smells different. And it definitely has a different impact on the community, local, and on land development.
But what's the argument for doing what you do? You're doing something that's so labor-intensive, so expensive per pound of meat or whatever the measure would be compared to factory farming. Some people would look at it and say, well, we've already got victory in food production because we can create such mass quantities at such a low cost.
Certainly. I think that is one way to look at it. And to be honest, I was vegetarian for many years. So it's kind of ironic that now I have become a livestock farmer. But the reasons for my vegetarianism was that I didn't want animals to suffer so that I could eat them. So I think there is a population of people out there who do still want to eat meat, but they're willing to pay a higher price for this kind of humane treatment. It's an alternative to either being vegetarian or to consuming this mainstream factory farmed meat.
Okay, and in terms of a larger scale message, you must feel that there's that we need to, as a society, go through some kind of change with regard to how we produce food?
I think so. I don't have enough of a global scale to visualize how that could happen. But for me, I'm motivated enough to do it at a community level and to grow, tens of animals that I can sell to people in the surrounding communities and feed myself with that. So,
but if you look at just what's happened in this country in the last 20, 25 years, there's been this enormous shift going on where there is now a marketplace for your kind of food, for small farm production of meats and other foods. And there's Whole Foods and You know, it's just a whole different thing now. This attitude and this perspective that you represent is a growing thing, and we have to assume it's going to continue to grow.
Absolutely, and I would like to see it grow, and I have really good relationships with my customers. A lot of them are repeat customers. They find my farm, they like what I'm doing, and they'll be customers for years to come. So there is that very impassioned base of people who are willing to invest and pay more of their money for this type of food.
If you were going to make an elevator pitch on your kind of business, that is a quick 30 seconds, here's why we do what we do and people should be excited about eating our kind of food.
Yeah, it's not exactly the most PC, but I would probably start by talking about manure and talking about feces, because that's really, to me, a big part of this. So when you have a factory farm or a concentrated animal feeding operation, the concentration of animal waste that comes out of that is toxic to the environment, to the animals themselves, and to the workers, the human workers who are part of that operation. So my farm, the concentration of that manure is so much lower that it's actually a fertilizer. It makes the land better. I started with a relatively forested piece of land. The animals are also helping me clear that land without using a lot of, gasoline-powered or diesel-powered machines, and they're bringing it back to grass along with that process. So we're actually improving the land while feeding people, instead of factory farms, which are causing environmental destruction or uncontrolled runoff and other issues like that. So,
okay,
for me,
so
it really comes down to density of feces.
So if I get the manure thing right, the manure angle, a way to judge the kindness that you're providing to the planet, the sustainability, is that the cattle or pigs or whatever it is that's on the land, the poultry, whatever they're leaving behind is beneficial to the land and
Absolutely. Is
absorbable by the environment because there's a balance going on there as opposed to a factory farm where it's a deluge and it overwhelms the property.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the key. It's about the density of animals that you have on your land and also how fast you rotate them through the different areas of land to give it time to rest and regrow and absorb that fertilizer, as you said.
Yeah, so this is fascinating stuff. I can't wait to continue to learn more about this with you and other people. Danielle Larice is here, Bottle Farm, BOTLfarm.com, I think. Is that right?
Yes, that is.
And you're in Ashford, Connecticut? Do I have the right
Ashford,
town?
Connecticut.
Good. All right, so what's different in the product?
That's a good question. There's a couple different things for us, especially. So any animals raised on pasture will have a different fat profile inside their bodies that has been shown to be more beneficial and better for cholesterol levels in humans that consume them. So first thing is a better fat profile. Second thing is there is a different taste, especially because on my farm we do all heritage breeds of the different species. These are slower growing but more robust and better natural forager type.
What does that mean, more robust?
So they have less resistance. They have more resistance to worms is a big mm-hmm. feature for most of them. So they don't get as many worms or they're able to fight them off better, I don't have to use as much deworming medicine or as many antibiotics in my animals that a factory farmer would in order to have to control that. So robustness is sort of a medical idea.
Oh, this is interesting. Now we're getting into the we're getting into the weeds of farming, as it were. I love that.
Ooh.
So you have to be thinking about that aspect. It's a challenge to keep an animal healthy.
Absolutely, yeah. The density, I know I keep returning to that, but that idea helps also because the same way that the manure doesn't build up to unhealthy levels. Because I only have, you know, tens of animals, not hundreds or thousands of animals,
mm-hmm.
also the diseases and the worms and the parasites don't build up as quickly in the herd, just because of there's a low density and they have a lot of land to move around on. That's also yep. an important reason that I rotate them through different pastures. So that gives not only the grass time to regrow, but also those worms and parasites will die according to their natural cycle before I bring the animals back on. So it's an extremely natural way of controlling those types of issues with the health of the animal, but just with natural means, not with medicine.
What's your primary product?
My primary product is pork. I also raise goats, sheep, and rabbits for meat, and I do eggs for, or chickens for eggs.
Mm-hmm. Why is pork your big thing?
Kind of a disposition thing. I really like working with pigs.
You guys get along.
Yes. They're wonderful animals, and when they have a habitat that's natural, they exhibit so many interesting behaviors. They really are curious. If you get the hose out and, you know, give them a little wallow, it seems like they smile and they wag their tails and they're almost dog-like in their enthusiasm.
You can feel their joy.
Absolutely. I feel similarly with my goats. They have, different climbing on things and, of course, trying to get out of their fences and eat everything that they can or can't. The goats also are very vivacious. So they're fun to have around, too, and they're also excellent at turning the forest into pasture. But I found that selling goat to an American market is not the hottest seller, let's say. There definitely is a
not a big item,
Yeah, but it's not something that everybody has eaten or has had exposure to,
mm-hmm.
Where pigs are wonderful creatures, and they also sell very well. So,
Danielle, hold on a minute. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll continue the conversation. Danielle Larice is here from BOTL, bottlefarm.com, Bottle Farm, doing natural, organic, sustainable, all those buzzwords kind of farming in very, very small scale. And this is, you know, it's a big movement, and I think we should learn more about it. So that's what we're doing here on WTIC. Something to make Danielle feel comfortable here on WTIC. She's in her element with the goats and the pigs, and we're learning about how you do farming the old-fashioned way, where there's kindness to animals, to the environment, and I suppose to us, because we're eating better food. Danielle from bottlefarm.com. Thank you again for being here, Danielle.
Thank you, Todd. I'm glad to be here.
So what's it like being a farmer? What time do you get up in the morning?
So farming is hard. I actually have a day job that I use to support myself and my husband and the farm. So mm-hmm. right now my husband is the primary farmer.
Okay.
So usually his day begins about 7, and especially when I'm not around on work trips, it ends about 7. Because besides the everyday animal chores that have to happen, making sure they have their minerals and their water and any supplemental food that they need, there's also infrastructure projects that have to happen. Although we've been farming at this location for 3 years now, we're still working on building some of the interior fencing that allows us to rotate the animals to new areas in a safe and effective way. And we're also still building our barn.
So there's permanent work to do.
Absolutely. Besides the seasonal and besides the daily, there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to go in, especially to livestock farming as compared to vegetable farming.
All right, so he's doing 12 hours a day. You have a full-time job off the premises to bring in extra cash. And then do you work during your spare time on the property?
Absolutely. I refer to that affectionately as my second shift.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to have something to do.
Absolutely. I think both my husband and I are fairly driven sort of people, and so I like actually the pressure of just there's always something to do on the farm. And you know, if you don't know what it is, you're just not thinking hard enough. There's always work to do on a farm. But I think that's true for lots of different types of farms. And
but is that your fun time as well? Is that your hobby? Is that all your free time? Is that your weekends, or do you take a day off? How does that work?
So we've set up a schedule that we take a half day of work every Sunday. So we still get up in the morning and work until about noon on Sundays, and then that's our half day off. It started actually as a half day off. I think it's now down to about 3 hours off, where we go out and eat lunch every Sunday, and then
come back and take care of some things.
Yeah, definitely. Because even after the animal care is over each day, we still need to wash the eggs and package them and make sure our website's up to date. And a lot of the sales that we do are direct to customers, so there's also setting up appointments with people that they can come and meet us and at the house, and we can sell them whatever they're interested in. So it's lots of different types of work, which of course keeps it interesting, but it's very busy.
So what are your thoughts about what the future of our consumption is? Because that ultimately is what this is all about from the point of view of consumers. What do, I mean, we can't all have meat the way we're used to eating meat if we keep moving in the direction of your kind of farming, because you don't create those kinds of quantities and the price is much higher and all that. So do you have any sense, or do you think about how that balances out, or are you just concerned with taking care of your end of things and, you know, let the rest of the world do what they will?
No, I definitely think that we're not so insulated as to not be able to think about those overarching issues about consumption, because that also goes into, you know, we have to set our price so that we're covering our costs, but that it's still palatable, I guess, to consumers.
You mean the people can absorb the cost, and you
exactly.
and you can sell the product.
Yes. So we do think about those issues, and I think part of it is that if you have more flavorful meat, then potentially you can eat slightly less of it at a time.
A lot less. We have to eat less.
But still feel satisfied by that experience because of the flavor and the quality. So a lot of our customers purchase whole pigs from us. So they'll get almost 200 pounds of meat at once. So certainly this isn't available for everyone. You basically have to have the space and the money to invest in a chest freezer so that you can store all of the meat in the freezer. But then we found for an average family, that's basically a year's worth of pork for them. Mm-hmm. So if they have the facilities and the disposable income or the
capital to do that,
they can invest in that, that it's a good way to get an entire year's worth of really delicious meat. And people, the feedback.
I'm sorry, I have just a few seconds left, so finish your thought.
Oh yeah, the feedback I get is that they don't feel, you know, like they're not getting enough meat or they're not satisfied. That is a very a good experience for them, and we have a lot of repeat customers that way.
All right, Danielle, great to talk with you. Thanks so much. Danielle Reese, it's Bottle Farm in Ashford, Connecticut, BOTLfarm.com. Appreciate having you here. It's great to talk.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
All righty. A little introduction to one of the local farms doing impeccable sort of small-scale farming. Interesting stuff.